irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and for those of you that have been listening, sending in questions and comments, thank you so much, and please continue to do so and continue to help spread the word that every Monday from 11 a.m. to noon Pacific time, this show will bring on special guests that can inspire, educate, and in some cases entertain, while bringing answers and options to making our lives happier, healthier, and more successful. Now, you can all do me a huge favor. Please forward one of our shows to your social media group or to someone you know that can benefit from a particular show. I've had so many people now that have contacted us that said that one of their friends sent them a show that was on a particular topic that they could relate to, and they were very appreciative. So, again, you can do that. We're going to reach a lot more people, and we're going to do more good together. So, as a reminder, Answers for the Family will continue to address a variety of issues, such as family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, and so much more. And we'll introduce you to talented authors and new innovations in the areas of health, security, and sometimes fun for you and your family. Now, our topic today is pretty far-reaching. We'll be talking about improving our physical health, our mental health, and one woman's journey of doing both and more. Our guest today is Saida Hafiz. She's a certified yoga instructor and wellness expert who also receives certification from the Natural Gourmet Institute. She is a holistic health educator at San Francisco Unified School District, where she focuses on sharing her knowledge and of physical and mental wellness with diverse groups. She is the author of The Healing, One Woman's Journey from Poverty to Inner Riches. Saida, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Thank you, Alan, for having me. I'm very excited to be here.
Well, I love the fact that we have you here. As I had discussed with you a little bit before the show, as well as with my producer, Jan, we love the fact that you are bringing this information to children. You're bringing it to our children that are in the public school, and I think it's at a time in which we all certainly need it. So thank you for that.
Most welcome, and I'm glad that my journey has made it full circle to where I was able to connect to things that started to put me on a healing path. And now I get to share how the tools of yoga and whole foods can connect to our students within public school.
Well, and then just as you're going to that point, tell us a little bit about your background and what you overcame to find your inner riches.
So basically, I was part of a family where, unfortunately, we've experienced domestic violence in our family. We were low income, and everyone was trying to figure out a way to not feel the pain. And unfortunately, I've had siblings who tried to numb their pain with substances such as alcohol and drugs. And for myself, I thought that I was steering clear of those things, but when I got into holistic health and learning how to cook, once I had entered into college and graduated, I thought, okay, I want to be part of the middle class. How do you do that? And I signed up for lessons in cooking. And what ended up happening was that I thought I had signed up for a class in like creams and sauces, sort of traditional Julia Child French cooking. But I didn't read the flyer carefully, and I signed up for a class called Food as Medicine. And then I started to learn how food could impact who we are. And it was really exciting to just learn just about how the things we take into our body, even like conversations we have or who we hang out with, can affect our or influence our our outcome and what things we'll experience. So it was, for me, I felt sort of kind of lucky that I got into this sort of course just by asking myself the question of like, what's a good life? Because I didn't see folks around me really having a good life. And so I thought, okay, how do I be middle class and how do I have a good life? And my answer was, okay, well, I probably would need to learn how to prepare meals and also take care of my body. So I joined a health club. And for some reason, I said, I'm not going to join unless there's something called yoga here, which I wasn't even quite sure what yoga was at the time. And it led me on this journey of taking a class with people who were twice or three times my age at the time, yet I couldn't do half the poses that they were doing, or I couldn't hold them as long as they were holding them. And so from there, I sort of had this internal nudge where I was had this voice that said, hey, you're going to be teaching this one day. And so I found myself learning more and sticking with it. So it's been a very kind of interesting journey with incorporating holistic health into my lifestyle.
You know, Saida, you mentioned in your book that as you were going through that process where you were improving your lifestyle, that it brought you face to face with some inner demons. And I think that many of us, you know, as we've made changes in our life, could relate to something like that. Could you share a little bit with our listeners kind of what happened and how you overcame it?
Yes. Yeah, so as I was saying, that my siblings had been using drugs and alcohol to numb their pain. For me, I was heavily into sugar. I, even at college, my first period class, I would have lollipops. And I was didn't understand it at the time, but I was consuming so much sugar that it would make me feel numb. And when I got into the holistic health and decided to do this sort of challenge that my teacher, Deborah Barr, had positioned for me, was to sort of go without refined foods and sugar. And so I decided to do that and do all my cooking from scratch. And after about the third day, I started having these violent flashbacks about how I was growing up. And then I realized that, wow, if food or stopping sugar can help me unearth this past, but yet make me feel as if I can grow and face it, there must be something pretty powerful here. So that's kind of where I was in terms of the book, because a lot of times people will ask me, you know, how did you put this story together? And I found myself, you know, telling folks over and over this story around no sugar for 3 days, no processed food for 3 days. And, you know, everything started to come undone where I could actually see like, well, wait a second here. I'm not really that healthy. And I'm, you know, hiding things or trying to run away from the past.
Now, is that what inspired you to write the book, The Healing?
Yeah, you know, I started this book with more of a how-to because I love the information that I was learning. And so I started to write out lots of, like, oh, if you do this yoga posture or if you eat this food, then your life is going to fall into balance, particularly if you're connecting them to, you know, the season. And that was coming along, and I even got some interest from publishers and agents that thought, oh, okay, this is a good idea. But as I started taking the writing classes and getting deeper into the story, what was coming about was how and why my experience changed because of the food and the yoga. So people were really connecting to the personal story, not just the, oh, how to. And quite frankly, there were a lot of folks who've had, you know, higher degrees and more education around how and why you should do something in terms of, you know, the scientists and other holistic health educators. But the motivational part came from sharing the truth of my story. And then people could see themselves in the story and realize that they could also overcome shame. You know, a lot of times we come from poverty, domestic violence, and we carry this burden of shame around when really a lot of times it's not our fault. So that's how the book came about. People really wanted to hear the truth of the story, not just the do this, do that.
And while we're touching on the truth of the story, in the truth of the story, you obviously talk quite a bit about, you know, your upbringing and some of the issues that your family was dealing with. What was the reaction of your family to your decision to share this story?
So when I decided to kind of sit down and really write the memoir from start to finish, it took about 4 to 5 years. And there was a point where it got really stuck. And I thought, why can't I move forward with it? And I just, in a sense, kind of was in this meditative state every day of doing nothing. And got this gentle nudge that said, now's the time to show this to your parents. And I thought, oh boy. So I went ahead and I, you know, my parents don't, they're not together. So I sent a copy to my dad, I sent a copy to my mom, and I just waited. And strangely enough, my father called and said, oh man, I love what you wrote. And I thought, really? And I was telling this story to a friend, and my friend said, how can he say that? He's the villain and he's on page one. And I said, I know, this is really strange. And then my dad followed it up with, you know, I just really wasn't the kind of man I wanted to be in those days. And I appreciate your truth and, you know, and your story. And so that gave me permission to put it out there. And my mother's reaction was, you know, she said, oh, wow, you know, neither of them disputed the facts that were in the book. But my mom said, you know, if this can help another person rise above their circumstances, then you should put it out there. And I was not expecting that
powerful.
Kind of
That's
support.
Powerful.
Yeah. Because in the past, I was called crazy. When I wanted to try to, you know, involve them in my own personal healing, they just thought I was nuts. I thought, you know, you're doing all this weird stuff. You need support. You need help from someone. And it's not us.
Well, I mean, that had to be incredibly powerful for you and motivating to keep you going forward, knowing that they not only acknowledge that it occurred, but recognize that it wasn't who they wanted to be and that they wanted to see it help others. I think that's beautiful.
Yes, and it helped me recognize that I was able to go deeper into my father's childhood and could understand where he was a victim and where he had experienced domestic violence. And, you know, the same with my mom's history, where there was a sense of abandonment. So that's the other thing. When you start to learn the backstory of your parents or people who have harmed you, it doesn't excuse their behavior, right. But it allows you to put it in the context that we're all victims of victims, and can we break that cycle? And so that's what I was intending to do, you know, breaking the cycle of poverty and violence through, and in this case, radical self-care, which I didn't call radical self-care at the time. I just thought it just all made sense to eat as whole as you can. If you want to be a whole person, try to eat whole foods.
You know, one of the things that I want to share with all the listeners, one of the things that I really appreciated in the book is that, you know, you shared a lot of very personal things, but it's not in the form of blame. And I think so much, you know, based on what's out there in the media and what people, there's this huge blame game that's going on. And you shared things that happened, but not in the form of, you know, I can now justify anything I do because I can blame this on somebody else. It was just presented as these are the things that happened, and these are the things that we can all do to overcome them and find the inner riches. And I think people need to realize that it makes it so much more powerful in the way in which you've done that. So thank you for that.
Yeah, you know, I've had some excellent writing teachers help me navigate this memoir. And when I told my teachers how my parents reacted, they, one particular teacher, Rachel Howard, she said, well, you presented the information in a way that, again, doesn't blame your family, and that I was able to just acknowledge that these things happened and here's my reaction to them. And she said that there was such compassion there, where a lot of times you don't see when someone's been wrong or hurt. And so, and that's kind of how I look at life. Like there are these series of situations and circumstances that are going on, and I can only be true to my reaction or my ability to respond to a situation or an environment. And the selfish part of me is when you don't blame the other person, you have such strong agency to how you're going to participate in the world and how you're going to decide, what is this experience going to teach me and how is it going to make me more responsible in the world to myself and to others? And that is extremely liberating.
Oh, yes.
I feel that when I get stuck in blame or putting something onto another person, that's just another way for me to give away my responsibility. I don't want to do that.
Yeah, but I think that's a great point. And again, that's why I really appreciate the book is because it presents that. And I know that within one of my companies, we work with a lot of at-risk youth. And so many times when we're talking to them or we're taking them to a specialized program that's going to work with them, and they're either speaking in a fashion of, you know, they're blaming someone. You know, in other words, they're blaming someone. Or at times I'll find that when we're interviewing the parents to see what might be best for that particular child, they're blaming someone. You know, they're not taking it and saying, you know what, here's what has occurred up to this point, and here's what we would like to see happen. And again, and that's the way I feel you've put it, these are factual things that occurred. So, you know, teaching kids at a younger age and to start focusing on things that get us away from the blame game, I think just has, you know, it's as I said in the introduction, we're going to talk about things that are far-reaching because we're going to make a difference that hopefully will be carried on through generations to get away from those types of things from a mental standpoint. And then on a physical standpoint. Yeah. And now on a physical standpoint, what are the things that we can do to improve so that we're not drawn into that area to begin with? And that's why I love the fact that physically you're doing yoga, you're doing things by changing the foods that we eat, getting us away from more processed foods and into things more natural.
The nice thing with the food and the yoga, they're just tools that I have been exposed to that I can use. And it helps to quiet down the chaotic chatter that goes on in my mind. It helped to hear with a little more true and clear in my heart. It allowed me to have more forgiveness towards others. So, you know, we look at our mind and our body, and everything to me is food. So you can, you know, take in physical food like an apple, or you can have a conversation with someone. That's another way to feed yourself. And you want to just be aware and conscientious of what you want to take in and what's going to contribute to a stronger mental and physical state. So when you're taking in things that uplift you, because many of us have had conversations or listened to your radio program And we think, wow, that was great. I feel like I could go out and conquer the world, or I can do this part of my life a little bit better. That's food we want to keep nourishing ourselves with. Or we've had conversations, or we see the phone ring and a name comes up and your mind goes, well, when I usually talk to that person, I end up feeling low energy. So I'll let it go to voicemail for now. And that kind of thing. So I just really start to be really conscientious of what's in my space so that I can then begin to build the fortitude. And what I've noticed over the past years, and this is why I love the title being the inner riches, because it doesn't say that I'm a multimillionaire. But what it means is that when tough things come up, I feel like I have reserves that I can actually deal with supporting myself or friends or family in that way, because I've allowed a lot of good things to come in to build up a stronger internal sense of self. And it does begin with how we eat food. I mean, there are foods that will deplete us or give us quick energy, like you had mentioned before about the school systems, where we want food that's going to really sustain students and ourselves for learning and having that mutual give and receive, because students have a lot of things to teach us and show us, and vice versa. So it's important that we're eating, whole fresh fruits and whole grains and not having everything so fragmented or processed, so that we don't feel like fragmented or processed people. We want to have foods that have a good, what I call vibration to them, where it works with the whole system. You know, our natural body knows how to connect to nature. You know, these other things that are being developed, that's new for our bodies to understand. So a lot of times, even when you break down like apple juice from the apple, our human system is saying, okay, where's the fiber? And so sometimes that'll send us off trying to crunch for potato chips, because we know that something's missing from a particular piece of food. So that's why I say the more you can have whole foods and whole grains on your plates, the better. And it does help you face life a little bit more. And it doesn't happen overnight. You really have to exercise that muscle for yourself.
Well, okay. So as a holistic health educator for a school district, do you see our schools moving away from more of the processed foods offered to children towards healthier foods that provide greater nutrition and energy for the kids? And if not, or if not fast enough, what can parents do to push that along? How can they help support it going in the right direction?
I know within the San Francisco School District that we're having more whole grains in our meals. We're having things be prepared within the day before, as opposed to back in, when I started in the district in 2002, it was foods that we were flying in frozen from the Midwest, and that's the best we could do at that time. And now that we're trying to support more money towards fresh fruits and vegetables and having meals prepared within the day so that students can feel the vitality from food, it is getting better. We still have a long way to go, and we are doing our best in that arena. But also the space where I give students agency and parents agency is to cook with their kids as much as they can in the evening and teach them about, fresh fruits and vegetables. We do that within the classrooms as much as we can, so that it's not a foreign thing to them. You know, when you see broccoli, you know where it comes from, so that everything's not just packaged and processed and not knowing where the natural source of our food comes from. So I had parents when I was doing direct service with students, they would come up to me and say, how did you get my kid to eat broccoli? Well, I said, well, we made the vegetable soup in class. I gave your child a metal knife We learned how to cut the proper way. And I was teaching kids who were 5 years old into about 10 years old at the time. And I said they took ownership that this broccoli piece is their contribution, you know, and we would learn to cut it and we would taste it and we would eat it. And it was an exploration. It wasn't a you must, you can't. It was just here are the offerings. And we would have sort of what's called a two bite club. And it's just like, give two bites. If you don't like it after that, that's fine. But, you know, kids need to be have the exposure over and over before they actually adopt it as a flavor or taste that they like. Our taste buds are so, we can always recondition them. And they've been conditioned to enjoy things based on our environment. So, and that's the thing. We don't want to have foods that are too salty or too sugary, particularly right out of the gate, because then we don't taste the real essence of the actual food, which is very delicious.
Well, we're going to take a break, but I want everybody out there, if you would like to follow along, you can go to Saida's website. It is www.saidahafiz.com. That's SAEEDAHAFIZ.com. If you're driving, don't try this. You can always go to our Answers for the Family website, and we will have all that information there. So you can follow along with us. We're going to take a break. Stay with us. You're listening to Answers for the Family.
Founded over 30 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, Westshield has continually focused on resolving issues that negatively impact families and businesses. Our signature therapeutic transportation service helps to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely transported to specialized schools, programs, and treatment centers with unsurpassed experience and success. We are supported by our full-service licensed investigation agency that has legally, professionally, and compassionately located hundreds of runaways and teens. We are experienced and qualified to help, offering solutions which may include referrals to our international network of top professionals in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, psychiatry, and investigations. Simply put, Westshield Adolescent Services and Westshield Investigations are the best solutions when your family is facing a personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's 1-800-899-8585, or visit our website at westshield.com. Thank you.
And we're back. You're listening to Answers for the Family. Our guest is Saida Hafiz, and we are talking about her new book, The Healing, One Woman's Journey from Poverty to Inner Riches. So, Saida, we've talked a little bit about yoga, and we've talked about the food that we're putting in our body. In your case, which came first? Was it the yoga or the food that started making the difference?
You know, strangely enough, it happened around the same time. I had started the cooking class first and was following, how to develop and cook new recipes. And then probably a few weeks after, I was taking yoga. And I always found that it was kind of interesting that the two were kind of concurrently happening. And the switch for me was the fact that I had graduated college and I was going to have my first apartment. And I thought, okay, how do I do this new life? You know, how do other young urban professionals live? And that's kind of how things started. So it was kind of sort of my whole formula that came together with how do I live this good life? And I didn't know I was going to be on this sort of spiritual path because of it.
And I love the fact that you refer to it as a good life. And I do as well. And I think, you know, too many times now with what's presented on television or whatever, the idea of a good life is presented in something that is very unrealistic. And I love the fact that, you know, what you're showing is this is a good life. We can, you know, we can eat well, we can exercise, we can have good relationships, all of these things. And that is what's good. That we can focus on that and be very, very happy. So let's go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. It's really interesting for me in terms of that question, because I appreciate the model that people put out there as a good life. And often it deals with material things of having. But when I was asking myself that question, I didn't stop with like, oh, I just have to have and acquire A, B, C, and D. It was, how do I want to feel? And that really changed everything in terms of, you know, I wanted to have enough energy, enough time. And when you ask that question in a holistic way, you go way beyond the latest shoes and purses. It's
right.
How do I want to interact with other people when they walk away from me? I want them to feel that they've been nourished by our conversation or inspired. And so good life really was expansive for me in terms of answering that question.
Well, now let's take just one of them from the standpoint of the physical side of it. I want to go into yoga for a minute. Again, as somebody who has done yoga, I have asked other people to join me. And one of the things that I've gotten is, well, I'm not flexible enough to do that. I would point out, I'd go, you know, when I first started doing it, you know, I had had a low back injury. I had blown out a knee. I mean, I had torn my rotator cuff. I mean, I'd had physical injuries from sports. And I didn't think so either. And what ended up happening was that all of those issues that were caused from injury went away. And so what would mm-hmm. What would you tell somebody as somebody who is a certified instructor when they say, oh, I'm not flexible enough to do that or it won't help me?
Well, step one is, again, yoga is a very vast and big it has a lot of entry points. So for someone who even says that, I would say we can start with taking a deep yogic breath. We're all breathing here. That's one thing we all, can do at this point in being alive. And so let's just see if you can breathe a little deeper down into the base of your lungs. That's doing yoga. I've taught people who were in wheelchairs, and if you're stretching your eyes, there's a whole yogic exercise series of stretching the eyes. And so you can go from the smallest of breath to a bigger breath to eye movement to how you move your fingers and toes and then twisting the spine. There's just so much to do that is actually called yoga. And one, even get the thoughts you think. So just having your mind shift from thinking maybe less negative thoughts to more positive thoughts. All those things are variations on doing yoga. So I really take people where they are. And there's something that someone can do that links to a yogic experience. And I was teaching a workshop yesterday, and this woman said, you know, I have a very, I think she said maybe contentious experience with my body. She said, but today I've just found myself breathing and opening up into spaces that I haven't felt in a long time. And that's the thing. That's the other part with yoga. It's not a performance. People think, oh, I have to be good at it. You just have to show up and show up in some way. And that's how I approach it. My postures aren't always aesthetically the best, but I just need to get to the mat or sit in the chair. I have a wonderful teacher that I work with, Stacey Durek. She has a book out called Yoga for Everybody, and you start in a chair, you know, because one gal said to me, oh, I can't get down on the floor, my knees. I said, well, you sit in a chair, we can start there. Let's have a class in the chair. So, yeah, it's really amazing what you can begin to do.
Yeah, I love the fact that you brought up the breathing, and that was probably one of the biggest things for me, was realizing that I needed to change my breathing, and I now have a morning ritual that involves breathing and grounding. You know, as far as, you know, mm-hmm. at a park. So it's just breathing and ground. And I have a stretching ritual too, but a breathing and grounding, because I realized how important the breathing was.
And that helps with every situation. If you've had a rough conversation or argument with someone, they always say, take a deep breath, calm down.
That, and you brought up the fact about, you know, the poses not being perfect.
Right.
That was another thing for me, was coming from competitive sports, you know, that then everything needs to be a competition. So, you know, I'm getting frustrated because I'm not doing it as well or as long as the others, and I had to get beyond the fact that this isn't a competition. And that then became very helpful as well.
It really, really is. I mean, and that's that sense of defining for yourself, how much can my physical body do today? What power do I have in this moment to make it the best for me right now, without comparing it to other people? Other people can inspire you, but you don't have to let it be, well, if I can't do what they're doing, then I'm not going to do it. Because they're doing their thing, and you just have to find ways to continue doing your thing. So that's kind of where I come from with it. And it makes life much more pleasant for me. And again, if I see, you know, beautifully done postures, I can be inspired by them, but I probably need to know more. What work did they do along the way to get there? Am I able to and willing to do that?
Right.
You know, oftentimes we don't ask that question.
Well, we have a comment that is coming in. I want to thank everybody that takes the time to do this. I know that some of you work during the day, so some of the comments will come in the night before. Some will come in afterwards. But the comments and the questions are much appreciated. So thank you for that. This one reads, I too came from a very poor family and rose to become a successful businesswoman. I feel that in every culture around the world, including the U.S., people get labeled as being from, quote, the wrong side of town, out of fear of rejection or having family and friends who may ridicule them, as they did with me. They never even try to get out. I did make it out, and thanks to a grandmother who believed in me. I believe, as you do, that it is our job to help and inspire our youth, and not just to talk at them, but to give them resources and a helping hand. I applaud you for your book and look forward to gifting it to inner city schools that I work with. Many thanks from Deborah in California.
Thank you, Deborah. I really appreciate that. If the book can be helpful to others, I really want it to get out there and into the hands of folks who will find value. And Deborah's point was so profound for me, because one of the things is that we can get out of our situation, but we also have to remember we're leaving a community. And so I know for myself, there were parts where I felt, oh boy, I'm being separated from the people who love me. And when we work with the youth at school, I always try to remember that maybe this parent isn't giving their child the best nutritious food, but I do know that that parent's way of saying to his or her child, this is how I'm showing you love. And so we have to, I know for myself, always have to be conscientious to not just take something away because it doesn't fit my judgment of the best, and know that parent is loving their child in a way that I may not express the love, but that we can come together and find new ways to support students and love them. I think that's the biggest thing, is that, we want to rise above communities and things that aren't supporting us in terms of our health. But we also want to make sure that we bring with us the love and give back the love from those communities that support us as well.
Yeah, and I like that and agree in a sense. And I have a similar thing in the sense to where I refer to it as, you know, that the parents are providing their love and doing the best they can within the tools that they were given.
Exactly.
Instead of judging them, you know, at that point, is try and help give them better tools, and let them who remain in their life be able to feel as good about having better tools as the child will have by receiving better love or care. So yes, I think we're on the same page. We talked a little bit about the yoga, but let's talk a little bit on the diet part. I know in the book you talk about you adopted a macrobiotic diet. Can you share?
That was the basis.
Yes, exactly. So share a little bit about, you know, what that entails and why you believe it is best for you.
So the macrobiotic diet, the term macro means large and biotic means life. So when I was studying this food philosophy and science, it opened my eyes up to creating a large life. And we have sort of this the centering around foods that create a feeling of being centered. And so you may hear some of the macrobiotic instructors talk about whole grains, particularly brown rice. And now you can find brown rice everywhere and on all the menus. But when I was starting to introduce it to my diet, it was not cool at all. And in fact, you know, some of my friends were Asian and they're like, why are you eating poor people's food? You know, you have a corporate job, you should be buying, you know, white rice and eating meat. So the food itself, so eating grains that kind of give you a lot of the different centering D vitamins that really kind of help combat stress. And so it was interesting kind of matching up the philosophy of the whole foods to the science of it and finding out how they really match up nicely. And so then what I would do is kind of eat to the center of this chart. So in the book, in the back, it'll have the yin and the yang food chart, which shows what foods can be very expansive and what foods can be very contractive. So, and I put drugs and alcohol on the far end of like things that make us feel far out and super relaxed, super loose. And then things like salt or contractive drugs can make us feel really tight or even if we work too hard. And my journey was I ate foods that were more centering. And so it allowed me to feel more centered and begin to deal with the issues and problems of my past and present. So that's kind of where the food journey started with me. As opposed to where before I was always on kind of like a more of a roller coaster ride, you know, lots of sugar, lots of refined foods. And then salty potato chips, you know, and lots of eggs to kind of just, and so I was on these swings back and forth to feel, you know, because I think maybe as a human being, we like to kind of feel this joy of, oh, I'm up, and then I swing to the opposite side. But then there's this really special feeling of feeling centered. And in the workshop yesterday, I called it, I like experiencing the hum of eating really balanced meals.
I like that. Now we have another, this is a question that's coming in. This one reads, my daughter Alicia is a gifted and highly intelligent young woman, but she has fallen in love with a boyfriend that is part of a gang and does not treat her with respect. As for me, I became pregnant with Alicia when I was a sophomore in college and was forced to give up my dreams to take a minimum wage job to take care of us. I want her to know she doesn't have to choose a life that is just getting by. I know she can be so much more. Do you think a 17-year-old would relate to your book if I got it for her? This is from Julia in Washington.
Yes. The flashbacks in the book deal with growing up in childhood and how my different friends were making choices. And I have to say that I had been exposed to, you know, sort of different drug life and not quite gangs, but folks who had some challenges. And the nice thing in here is I feel that even some of the guys in the neighborhood, when they see that you are on a path and really want to do better, I was strangely had some like invisible protection from the mistreatment. So I feel in terms of with your daughter that for her to keep feeling this deep sense of esteem, and I feel that she will find protection wherever she goes. But I feel that she may see herself in me and maybe in some of the friends that I've had along the way that's depicted in the book. So it could be a powerful tool for her to explore and see what her inner voice is telling her.
That's wise advice. You know, I just looked at the clock and we're nearly out of time. What I'd like to ask is, what would you say are the two most important things that all of us can do in our life to improve the quality of our health, our happiness, and our longevity?
Well, one of the things is I feel that we often forget that the power is in the present moment right now. Choices that we make right in this moment can impact the bigger, larger sense of who we are. And we're all equal in that. We're all given the opportunity to respond or react to our present moment. And, you know, earlier we talked about the blame and the forgiveness. We can choose how we want to participate and react to situations and people. I feel that's one of the most powerful things. And secondly, I would say deep compassion for yourself. Allow yourself that if you don't select something that feels the best for you, use your next moment to be compassionate and try again. And that constant cycle of, I may have done it in a way that I didn't like 10 times, but I'm going to try this 11th time. and just keep that sort of love and compassion toward yourself, and then it spreads to other people. So the power in the present moment and the love and compassion surrounding that.
That's beautiful. Saida, thank you so much for coming on the show, and I really want to acknowledge and honor you for what it is that you're doing out there. You know, you're making a positive difference in the lives of others. That's the message that we want to put out from this show. And I think that you're doing it in a beautiful way. So thank you for that.
Thank you so much, Alan. This has been wonderful. I really appreciate you having me on the show. And the work that you're doing is amazing. So I'm glad to be a small part of it.
Thank you. Now, for everybody out there, please be sure that you put us on your calendar and tune in next Monday when our special guests will be Martin Coe. Martin is known to many of you as Sensei John Kreese from the original Karate Kid, which is now a new series called Cobra Kai on YouTube Red with the original cast from the Karate Kid. Marty is also, he has starred in Rambo, Tombstone, and many other movies and TV favorites. And our other guest will be internationally renowned Detective Logan Clark as we talk about how two guys who have either played the role of or live the life of tough guys, came to produce products that relieve pain in many ways for many people. And please, when you get the opportunity, visit our archives of past interviews at answersforthefamily.com or subscribe to our show through iTunes, Stitcher, or YouTube. And if you like what you hear, please leave a review. It will help us reach more people and be greatly appreciated as we all try to make a positive difference in the lives of others. Next time you're on Facebook or Twitter, please remember to stop by our page, check out some of our latest posts. If you like them, like us, and continue to spread the word. Be good human beings, and be with us again next week on Answers for the Family.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.